From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It was on one of these trips, I think, that I had my first trip for the man who's now the governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, and his wife. They helped me get started.
First of all, President Clinton clearly was mistaken, and he corrected the mistake to his credit. And no, I had never met Jeffrey Epstein. I was never on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. I was never on any plane with Jeffrey Epstein or with Ghislaine Maxwell. Never met her.
Well, you heard in there the former president, Bill Clinton, speaking in what was a closed-door congressional hearing regarding Jeffrey Epstein. The video now released, and what got a lot of attention was he mentioned J.B. Pritzker and his wife, M.K., but what was he actually talking about? For sure, a lot of people have opinions. Pritzker, very clear in his comments, we'll discuss that. Also, a change at the top for the Department of Homeland Security, and what could that mean for ICE operations here in Illinois? That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest back with us this week, Dan Petrella, political writer for the Chicago Tribune. Dan, it's always good to have you back with us.
Glad to be here.
So, Dan, you've covered this. You've looked into this. It was a little confusing. I have to admit, when I first saw some of the statements online that people were putting out, I was thinking, what has happened here? What exactly did Bill Clinton say? I mean, we heard some of it there. Referring to when he met and had been with the Pritzkers, when you're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, all of this gets magnified. What actually took place there?
Yeah, so this was in the, as you said, the closed-door depositions that took place last week. The video was released Monday, late in the day. I think I saw it when I was ironing my shirt for the next day. But the line of questioning the former president was answering had to do with travels that he had made in the early 2000s when he was getting the Clinton Foundation off the ground after he had left the White House. And during that time, Jeffrey Epstein had, given him use of his plane and sort of the deal that they had, according to the testimony that the former president gave, was, on these flights that they would go on, he would give an hour of the time to Epstein to discuss politics and economics and things like that. The record show and the testimony shows that those flights ended in late 2003. And as it turns out, according to both the former president's office and the governor, the flight that Clinton was remembering that he was on with the Pritzkers was actually in 2008. It was a well-documented trip to sub-Saharan Africa. Lots of people on that trip on a plane that was provided by Google, actually. And, quick internet search turns up photos of Pritzker in the background on that trip with the former president. Funny enough, former Cheers star Ted Danson and I believe his wife Mary Steenburgen were also on that trip. So lots of folks on the trip. And then there was another trip that the future governor, went on with President Clinton in 2013, which was a private trip. They visited some places in the Middle East and India, but Epstein not involved in either of those cases, either of those instances. So, it was a little bit unclear what exactly the former president, why exactly that made its way into his testimony. May have just been that he was misplacing dates of things that happened, 2 decades ago. But there's pretty clear records. There are searchable versions of the Epstein flight logs out there that you can look at. And it took all of about 5 minutes to, track those down and do a control F search on your keyboard for the name Pritzker. And the only hit that comes up is one trip, I believe, that the governor's cousin, Thomas Pritzker, went on. And so nothing connected to the governor. That didn't stop, though, many Republicans from trying to make hay of the issue. And, even after the facts, as best we could ascertain them, came out, that didn't stop people from continuing to promote that narrative.
Now, I should mention Thomas Pritzker, the cousin of G.B. Pritzker, had also been the chair of the Hyatt Hotel Board. He stepped down, though, after his ties with Epstein got a lot more attention. Charlie, you're right when it comes to the fact that, of course, you know, this has been disproven. And Pritzker gave a very detailed and adamant response that he had nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein and never met him. But people don't often stick around for the explanation or read that. So in some ways, I mean, this is the type of thing that doesn't help somebody who's trying to build their national political image.
No, it doesn't. And this is the kind of thing that will be brought up against JB in the future, and whatever further endeavors he has, he'll hear about it on the campaign trail, I'm sure, here in Illinois. And if he runs for higher office in a couple of years, that'll be used against him. And there's, in my mind, it's, I guess I would warn people that if you live in a glass house, you shouldn't be throwing stones. Because, like, if I'm Pritzker and somebody asks me, what about these Epstein files? I'll say, well, yeah, my name was in there 7 times. And it was in stories where my name was in the headline. On the other hand, the president was in there, oh, what, like 38,000, 40,000 times, and he still hasn't said anything about it. So that would be an area that Republicans might want to tread softly. But the facts are that there's absolutely no connection between Pritzker and Epstein's plane, and that's just not my opinion. Mark Maxwell, who was a very outstanding bureau chief here in Springfield for WCIA back in the day, and he's now a chief political correspondent at the NBC affiliate in St. Louis, he actually went through the tail numbers on planes, Federal Aviation Administration registrations, flight manifests, publicly released flight logs, court records, document key dates and outcomes. We reviewed them. This is him and his show. We reviewed them and established a timeline and fact pattern that clarifies Clinton's remark and contradicts the GOP allegation. And the thing that got me the most is that in that 2008 trip, by the time the Clinton Foundation delegation departed for the sub-Saharan nations on July 28th, Epstein was already in jail. So it's, and one of the things that Mark mentioned also is that really what maybe people ought to do, that, and this is the old saying from City News Bureau, if your mom says she loves you, check it out. He said, what happens when the next one of these comes up, it might be wise for us to check it out, because these records are publicly available, and anybody bothered to check them before they started writing these stories, they could have avoided this whole mess. But on the other hand, like I said earlier, I don't think in a political campaign, I don't think that the allegations that Pritzker is somehow involved will not gain some traction with folks who are inclined to believe it anyway.
Sure. And I think that's been very evident for a lot of people mentioned, I think, in the Epstein files so far. That, you know, there's not necessarily evidence in some of these instances of people with any wrongdoing, but it is damaging to their careers and their name being put out there. Dan, I mean, your thoughts on that as far as Pritzker, if, you know, politically, I'm sure this was not something he was anticipating he was going to have to try to answer for and possibly answer for several times.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, or, you know, I guess we won't see, but to know what the conversation may be between the former president and the governor next time they speak. They're actually both, as we record this on Friday, going to be attending the homegoing service for the Reverend Jesse Jackson in Chicago. So it'd be interesting to see if, anyone catches sight of them speaking to each other today. when they are at that event. I think one thing that's important to note too, the sort of guilt by association with the governor's cousin is that the governor has said, publicly that he's not particularly close with his cousin. It's also worth noting that they were on opposite sides of a big family feud in the early 2000s when the succession plan put Thomas and the governor's sister Penny on one side in charge of the businesses, and JB and his brother and some of the other cousins weren't too pleased with that. It went into this whole acrimonious fight. So, it's the guilt by association thing, I think, is a really slippery slope. And I think it just proves that I shouldn't try to use this adage because I can't remember exactly, but the thing about how many times around the world a lie can travel before the truth wakes up in the morning or whatever it is. Yeah. And I will not at all be surprised if we see a clip of that Clinton testimony on our television and computer screens come September or October of this year.
Oh, for sure. And then let's move on, because there's some other topics to talk about this week. There's also been a major change in the cabinet of the President Donald Trump. Kristi Noem has been moved out as the DHS secretary. She was in charge during Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago. And of course, we believe, at least from everything we've been told, and Dan, maybe you've heard something different, but we've heard that ICE agents are going to come back with a more of a fury here in 2026, especially as the temperatures warm up in Chicago. We've had a new person put in place for DHS, or at least nominated to be put in place. That's Mark Wayne Mullen, a senator from Oklahoma. Assuming he's confirmed, I would think it's not likely to change the ICE push out there in places like Chicago and Illinois. But any updates on that?
No, I think we're all sort of waiting to see what happens in the wake of the two fatal shootings in Minnesota. I think I was a little bit surprised by the news yesterday of Noem's reshuffling, departure, firing, however, ouster, whatever term you want to use to describe it. It seemed like there was a little more heat, back a couple months ago when the Alex Pretty shooting and the Renee Good shootings took place, and then things had sort of died down a little bit. But there also seems to be some, internal tension within the administration. I don't expect that we will see much of a change in position from the administration, given the appointee's points of view. He's a very Trump-aligned person. I was reminded on another public radio recap show that I was listening to this morning that his best-known moment is when he threatened to get into a fistfight with the president of the Teamsters Union during a Senate hearing. So not exactly somebody who I think has a reputation for being a calm, level-headed sort of figure. And I thought you'd think you saw that reaction from many, many members of the Illinois congressional delegation yesterday, who were pleased to see Noem go, but didn't take for granted that it would mean any real change of the administration's policies or approach to immigration enforcement.
And I wouldn't try to fight a Teamster, I will just say that. But Charlie, J.B. Pritzker, again, was out quickly after the Noem news broke and put a video out saying, "Don't let the door hit you." I think that's exactly what he said on your way out. But again, it might be foolish to sit here and think, "Oh, well, a kinder, gentler version of the ICE operations are coming because somebody else has been put in charge."
No, I think the president's position is pretty clear on this. And I think the reason Noem got fired more than anything else was because she contradicted something the president said. And it was on an ad campaign where they spent a couple hundred million dollars, and it showed her in very flattering photographs in front of Mount Rushmore saying how they're going to get rid of all these illegals. And she told the congressional hearing that, oh yeah, the president had okayed that. And the president said, "No, I did not." And I think that was like the final straw. But if you look at it, on the surface of it, she's either totally incompetent or she's a liar. And I say that because at the hearing, she was asked about the shooting of Mardimar Martinez, and she said, "Oh, I don't know anything about it." And she said this when Martinez is like three rows behind her standing up in a congressional hearing. Now, it strikes me, if she really doesn't know anything about it, how could she not be aware of what was going on when this was like national news? and it was in the headlines everywhere. And so, as I said before, she's incompetent if she's not aware of this. And if she is and denies it, then she's a liar. But I tend to favor the latter interpretation, because when you look back on the stuff she says, she's lied numerous times. The people who were murdered by ICE agents in Minneapolis, oh, they were domestic terrorists. Or she said at the hearing, she said, oh, we've never taken into custody any American citizens. And Senator Durbin, who was there, called her out on that. Well, yes, you have. So I think it finally got to the point where when she contradicted what happened with the president, he finally figured that I've had enough of this. I'll get rid of her and put somebody else in who is less a performance artist and more hard-nosed, knock some heads together person to run the outfit.
And of course, Noam came to Springfield last year as well, and basically tried to politicize a young woman's murder here as part of the reason for immigration enforcement had not spoken to the family about that. And they were very upset. And yeah, I think this is this was a decision that was probably coming for a while. You know, they made the action. Then we will see how it impacts what happens in the state and across the country later this year, especially heading into an election season. It's going to be interesting to watch. I did want to also mention, and Dan, this occurred since we recorded the show last week, is when the military action was taken in Iran, bombing beginning there with the U.S. and Israel. A lot of people were caught, Americans caught overseas, not able to get home. That's still a bit of an issue. And the governor weighed in on that this week. He sent a letter to the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, asking for some clarification and for some action to be taken. Again, it's an opportunity for Pritzker to, I would say, get more on the national stage, not saying he's not concerned about those people.
No, absolutely. And these, you know, these types of letters that are put out then also as press releases are as much for, you know, the political optics as they are for the policy that's being recommended. I mean, we write about these kind of things from time to time. It's rare, I think, that we actually see these sort of, correspondence cause any real policy changes. What he did ask for was a public commitment to charter flights to help Americans leave, looking into emergency contracts to help Americans with departures, those sorts of things. So, you know, practical things that a governor of a state that probably has some residents who were in Iran at the time should be concerned about, but also, as you say, very much in the vein of, the way in which a lot of the focus over the past year for the governor has been on national political issues, how they affect Illinois, obviously, because as we've seen, national politics has come to the streets of Chicago and the suburbs. Yes, as you say, another opportunity for him to, demonstrate the ways in which he is, from his point of view, standing up for the residents of Illinois.
From everything you hear and see, this was not a well-thought-out mission. There doesn't appear to be any game plan for what we're going to do now that we killed the Ayatollah. And it seems that the war is just spreading. And a lot of right-wing commentators are saying, wait a second now, this isn't what we signed up for. This isn't making America great again. This isn't getting us out of these foreign wars that go on forever. And so there's a lot of complaints, and there are Illinoisans included in folks who are trapped overseas. Airspace has been closed off and on, and they're trying to get home however they can. And I think that's what the governor was doing in that letter he sent to Rubio. He wanted there to be a public commitment for charter flights, military aircraft, or both, to assist Americans trying to leave the region, or even have emergency contracts with charter companies or commercial airlines to fly people out as airspace became open. But there did not seem to be any well-thought-out plan on the federal level. What can we do about the folks that are U.S. citizens, even tourists, not just people in the embassy or working on foreign aid missions, the people who are just visiting when the blowback occurs after we bomb Iran, did we think that Iran would say, oh, okay, we won't do it, we're sorry, and that they wouldn't retaliate? There didn't seem to be any plan for how can we get our citizens out.
Yeah, and it seems to me in the past, there has always been notice given quite often on these things. But again, maybe the timing of this didn't allow for it. Whatever the case, people caught. I do know that they are making efforts to try to get people out. And another topic that we'll save a few minutes for, something we've been talking about quite a bit, which is unfortunate because it's baseball season, not football season. What are we doing here? It's the Chicago Bears and where they're going to have a future home. The Indiana legislature, of course, has now passed legislation and it's been signed into law to give some tax breaks and raise money to help the Bears build a stadium in Hammond, Indiana, just over the border. The Bears still talking as well about a site in Arlington Heights, and the legislature's working on that. This week, Dan, the governor was pretty adamant that he thought something's going to get done and the Bears were going to go along with Illinois. He didn't get into a ton of specifics, but he said once the primary election is over this month, we may see things start to move. Any thoughts on that? You've been following it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously the legislature, I believe, is not going to be back in Springfield, either chamber. I'm checking my calendar here next week, this coming week. No, I lied. Actually, it looks like maybe the Senate will be in town, but the House is the one dealing with the legislation right now. So they are not scheduled to be back until the day after the primary. You know, I think progress has been made. It's moving a little more quickly now than it has been for the, I think, boy, 3 or 4 years now that, you know, there's the same structure of allowing the team to freeze its property taxes and then, you know, negotiate payments with the local taxing bodies has been around. The idea is not new. It's finally, you know, advanced out of a committee. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether it's taken up quickly after the primary is over, or if this is one of the issues we are all wondering about, you know, at 8 p.m. on May 31st this year, when the session is winding down. You know, I think there's still the Chicago lawmaker issue that the Bears have yet to resolve, at least publicly, with how they will, you know, appease folks who are not happy about having to, you know, helping the team leave when there's still debt on the stadium, which not the team's responsibility, but, you know, the lawmakers want some sense of how that issue is going to be taken care of without overburdening Chicago taxpayers. And, you know, I think it remains to be seen, you know, the city also has been sort of renewing its push or sort of saying, don't forget about us, Mayor Brandon Johnson and some folks in his administration. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that all plays out once the primary is past us and folks are really back in Springfield in earnest.
Yeah. And Charlie, for people, again, that don't follow this stuff, don't know how the legislature tends to work, it may seem as though there's not a whole lot going on, but really behind the scenes, you know, talks are taking place. And once a deal can come together, it could move in a matter of, let's say, hours at least. We may see that type of thing happen where we don't know anything about it. And the next thing you know, they pop out the legislation. It's passed and on its way to the governor and big press announcement that the Bears are staying and this is what they're going to do. That wouldn't shock you, I'm assuming.
Oh, not at all. It would not shock me at all. I fully expect that will happen later this spring. And you know, there was an interesting story in the Trib the other day, and Dan, it was your colleague, Robert McCoppin, who went to Indiana and talked to people. And it turns out not everybody in Indiana is on board with this. He spoke to a radio host on a local radio station in Hammond, who said it was, and I'll quote him here, so it was jolting how state lawmakers did nothing to lower utility charges, but acted immediately to help the Bears. And this is a quote from Chuck Pullen, the host. A lot of blue-collar people in the area are struggling to get by. They're asking, where's our local and state government to help us? And why do the Bears get this special treatment? And they're starting to realize that there's a whole bunch of taxes that are going to go up. And the average citizens, as this radio host suggested, aren't really happy about this. So there may even be some pushback in Indiana. Plus, the site that the Bears are looking at is basically, it's a contaminated landfill. And so the Bears are doing their due diligence. And I wouldn't be at all surprised that as the Illinois legislation moves along, there'll be a report that is, oh, well, we really can't build a stadium here in Hammond because it's a toxic dump.
Let's move on to our notes from the field. Dan, I'll go to you first.
Well, I'm watching a couple interesting dynamics in the several congressional races that are happening here in the Chicago area. A couple of them set up by the departures or the impending departures of U.S. Resident Kristen Morthy and Yerba's Representative Robin Kelly, who are running for the Dick Durbin Senate seat. We have a lot of outside PAC money flowing into this race, but also a lot of money flowing through a PAC set up by the governor to support Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton in that Senate race. So it's all coming in fast and furious and trying to keep track of all of that. Also watching, as I mentioned earlier today, is the burial service for the Reverend Jesse Jackson, whose son and namesake Jesse Jackson Jr. is attempting a political comeback after he went to federal prison following the last time he was in Congress for misusing campaign funds for personal uses. I am going to be very interested to see how the death of the Reverend Jackson affects the outcome of that race, whether voter sympathy for his son or just the attention to the family gives him a boost in this race where he's attempting again to make this political comeback.
All right. And Charlie.
Well, the Illinois Flash Index for February continued its modest downward trend. It's slid to 101.3 from 101.5 in its January level, according to U of I Professor Emeritus Fred Geertz. And he pointed out in his report earlier this week, the state economy is still growing as 100 is the dividing line between expansion and decline. But he noted, and this is his quote, "This is the lowest level since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, recovery in spring 2020. Corporate tax receipts were down sharply from the same month last year. Individual income tax revenues were up modestly. Sales receipts were down slightly." And Professor Geertz compiles this index for the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the university every month. And then sort of buttressing what was said, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which is the legislature's fiscal gurus, came out with their report. They said through the first 8 months of FY 2026, revenues deposited into the state's general funds are up $1.337 billion, so $1,337 million, growth of about 4.1% compared to the same period in FY 2025. The personal income tax receipts are up on a net basis, $685 million. Corporate income tax receipts are down. Sales tax is up marginally. But the bottom line is that the growth in the first two-thirds of this fiscal year is more than $1 billion better than the same period of a year ago.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and the Chicago Tribune's Dan Petrella. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.